Welcome to Season 7 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Daniel Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
All Play will be at Origins booth 1206 with Container, Grunts, and Triangulation available for the first time at a U.S. convention. They will also have Le Chocolat and Golden Goals, two brand new tiny box games. In Le Chocolat, you'll be splitting a chocolate bar and claim the flavors that taste the best. Mix up 36 tiles and arrange them into a grid. On your turn, split the chocolate tiles into two chunks along a straight line. If there is ever a chunk of three or fewer tiles left at the end of the player's turn, they're going to claim that chunk. Now, you're going to continue playing until all chocolate has been claimed. Then score based on the rules of the scoring card. That's going to change every play. Did you get the best pieces while avoiding negative ingredients? Most points will win. Then in Golden Goals, you're living out your soccer or football fantasy, depending on where you live, to score the winning goal to break the tie in overtime. So unfold an entire soccer pitch from this tiny box as you line up your squad to face down the rival club. Use clever positioning to set up the perfect shot into your opponent's goal, but be sure to protect your own goal as well. So make sure to check out both of these games at Origins Game Fair this year. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 143, Pirates of High Tees. Today we are joined by Emily Vincent, board game designer and founder of Pink Hawk Games. Thank you so much for being on the show. I know we've talked about this for quite some time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to finally get to be here.
Yeah, it's always exciting to like have a published game out there in the world that you can talk about. And I have so many people that reach out asking to be on the show. And I'm like, I'm sorry, the game has to be out. Because I know there's so many wonderful Kickstarters out there. But, you know, we don't always know if they're going to fund, sadly, or if they'll fulfill.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I had reached out, I think, when the Kickstarter was live. And you were like, let's wait. And so that journey has taken just about a year. So very excited to finally be here, because that also means the game is finally out there in the world.
Woo! The pirates are happy about this, for sure.
They are. They absolutely are.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know you, mind talking a little bit about how you got into designing games first, and then we'll jump into pirates?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started in software and then sort of quickly moved to user experience design. And I spent a couple of decades doing user experience design for critical decision systems. And at some point back in like 2022, I went to PAX East, because I always go to PAX East because I love PAX East. And I came home and sort of said, you know, I feel like the games I want to play just aren't there. And I was like, I'm a designer. I wonder if I could design a game. And so my partner went out for a long run, which for him, that's like 4 hours.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's an ultra marathon runner.
I mean, good on you. Wish that was me. That's not.
And so he came back and I was surrounded by little bits of paper. And I was like, hey, I think I just made a game. Want to play it? And I think I sort of got bit by the bug and just like threw myself into it as much as I possibly can, because I really enjoyed it.
Oh, that's awesome. And so then going over to Pirates of High Tees, where'd the inspiration for this one come from?
Yeah, so this is actually one of the first games that I started designing. In that first year of game design, I had sort of heard, you know, your first handful of games aren't going to be very good. So I was like, I'll just design them all at the same time and just get that part of my design career out of my way. And so I sort of started with the idea of, you know, design what you know. And one of the things that I know and love is afternoon tea. So the original idea for this game was just a game about serving afternoon tea. And there was going to be, you know, you had your scone course and your sandwich course and your dessert course. And the original game actually started very much as a like literal recipe fulfillment of like, there was milk and there was flour and there was sugar and stuff like that. Cause it was like baby's first game design, you know? And so I just sort of dove right into the things that I knew, which is I know how to bake for afternoon tea, and started there. And so it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe 6 months or a year later that the pirates ever even actually showed up in this game design. Originally, it was just, let's make some afternoon tea.
I'm not going to lie, I do have my tea here with me. I decided to bring a vanilla lavender Earl Grey to this recording, but I am a huge fan of going out to like tea houses and stuff. But sadly, there's not many near me, but it's definitely a thing that when I go to Europe, I do. So I'm a fan of this inspiration.
Yeah, there was a place in downtown Boston that serves like a full afternoon tea right in the middle of downtown. It's right by the Parker House Rolls place. I believe it's called Silver Dove because the chain that sort of does this restaurant, they like to name it after local animals. And the only animal they could figure out was like pigeons, but they're like pigeons and rats. That's not going to be the great name of a tea house, but pigeons are also doves. So they're like Silver Dove or something like that is the name of it.
That's so funny. Yeah. So I'm like an hour and a half from Boston, but I'll definitely have to check that out next time I'm in the city.
It was good. We went there for my birthday 1 year. Interestingly, this game, for as much as it was about afternoon tea, it also didn't have tea in it for like over a year because it was all about the food. So I was really inspired by just the meal of afternoon tea. And I had a playtester at one point be like, I was kind of disappointed because this game has the word tea in the title and there's no tea in it.
That is really interesting.
I think just because of I think of afternoon tea as the meal and all the things that change in the food and the menu and stuff like that. And then also you get some tea, right? And sometimes some champagne. But then I got to dive deeper into the teas because what came from that is I was like, all right, so how does the tea go with this? And the realization was that the teas are the contracts, the commissions, right? They are the set collection that you need to do. And so you now pair all of your food with your tea.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Do you have a go-to as far as the food for an afternoon tea that you like?
I mean, I love the dessert part of it. And so anything that's on that top tier, the cakes, and then I like my scones with clotted cream. I'm not a big jam person. Oh. And then I get through the sandwiches because you got to get through the sandwiches.
Oh no.
I think I make a pretty good egg salad sandwich, tea sandwich when I make them. And I'm happy to eat a little ham sandwich. But for me, the salmon and cream cheese and like watercress, and those are just not my favorites.
That's totally fair. One of my hack things is I like making cucumber sandwiches, but it's the simplest recipe ever. Like just get some fresh bread and then cream cheese you can buy. That's like the vegetable one. Just like spread that and then do some thin slices and then add like a few herbs or like salt and pepper on it. And it's really good. That's like something I made to be quote unquote fancy in college.
Love it. It's always fancy if you cut the crusts off and put it into like little triangles or little rectangles.
Totally. It tastes good too. It's very refreshing. It's got a nice little crunch.
Yeah.
So then like, where did the pirates come from?
Yeah. So this game, as it evolved, it went sort of from a, you know, straight recipe fulfillment to there were actually dice involved where we were trying to bake and you could, I don't know how much you bake, but like some recipes, like it's a little bit of a hope and a prayer. Like sometimes you put it in the oven and it comes out great. And other times you put it in the oven, and you're like, I don't know what happened. It collapsed or it's a pile of goo or whatever. So I started playing with dice. And then from there, I sort of went to this like, well, what if other people were like sabotaging your bakes, right? And so I could place some gunpowder on someone else and it would make their cake worse, right? And so I was playtesting this version and one of the players was like, I don't understand why we're being so mean to each other in the kitchen. Like, what is my motivation to want to ruin your cakes, right? Maybe if like we were jerks, like what if we were pirates of the high teas and that's why we are attacking each other? And I was like, I love that name. I'm here for a pun first design. And so everything from that moment was, okay, if we're pirates who love tea, what is the game, right? And I think that's when the game really sort of got legs. It found a real vision of what kind of experience I was trying to create. And so from there, it was just this really fun exploration of like, what does it mean to be a pirate, right? And how do pirates go with tea? And how can we make these feel like they live in the same universe and not just like two things that are sort of tacked together?
I'm a huge fan also of a good pun. I was noticing the high tea because even when I was searching up the game and like BGG, because sadly I've not had a chance to play it yet, but I was like, oh, a few people have caught on to this pun, but you're the only one who added pirates.
Yep. And there was a Pirates game, Pirates of the Teas or High Seas or something like that.
Hey, it's getting hard to name games. There's just so many out there. So you really got to start slicing up those words.
I have a game name that I really want to do, but there's someone else who has a completely different game with that name that only came out a year or two ago, and SEO game is strong. So I'm like, I'm going to have to let go of that name and come up with something else.
Oh, I hate that. I have a prototype, Not Your Grandma's Bingo, and then someone's like, yeah, so someone just made that game and it just came out. I was like, no! Damn you!
Yeah, I'm just going to have to start like trademarking every creative name and then actually making the game.
Yeah, it's the following through part you got to get on. Especially if you're not just self-publishing, because you also pitch, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Well then, all right. So Pirates of the High Tees, explain, how do you play this game?
The game at a high level, it's a set collection, or you can call it recipe fulfillment. I'm a little fuzzy on the distinction, with a spatial action selection that I think a lot of people think looks like worker placement, but you've only got one worker. So you are trying to make sets of one tee paired with three dishes. And each dish card has a flag. So there are four different fleets in this game, and then a flavor profile. And so there's 0 to 3 flavors on every card, where we have like salty, fruity, chocolatey, or just none of those things. And so every round, the game is played over 9 rounds, and every round you're going to deploy your pirate meeple into the pirate ship, where there are a bunch of action spaces. And the action spaces are ordered front to back, such that the ones at the front get you sort of the least amount of things, and the ones at the back get you a lot of things, or get you to where you can serve the captain your set of afternoon tea and score doubloons, which is important because the pirate with the most treasure is the winner. So basically the trade-off that you're making there is I can go early and I can get just a few things, but I get to choose first, right? Or I can go later and get a bunch of stuff, but I kind of get whatever's left over. But that order also changes the turn selection order for the next round. So if you need to make sure you get your first choice next round, you might have to hedge forward such that you maybe get a little less this round, but it makes sure that you can serve the captain next round. And so there's some fun sort of jockeying for position on the pirate ship while you're also trying to do this sort of set collection, because your T's, your objectives, they are a sort of A and or B scoring. So every T has two ways that you can score it. You can score it by matching the flags that are on that T, or you can score it by matching the flavor profiles. Or if you're very clever, you could do both at the same time and get a bunch of additional gold. So one of the other tensions in the game is, do you want to push for that perfect, I scored both bounties, or do you just want to like, I just got to get these through. Let me serve a lot fast, or let me serve a few perfect ones slowly. And so to sort of add the last, I guess there's two last wrinkles, the last couple wrinkles. So one is that in this game, you can actually stack your dish cards together. So you smash food together to create different flavor profiles. So you can take a card that has, you know, a green flag, smash a pink flag on top of it, and create a new pink flag dish that has all the flavors of the two that you squash together. This sort of lets you craft the set that you're building, but also leads to some fun around the table conversation of like, would I eat that, right? Of like, would I eat that fish taco lemon tart? I don't know, right? And so there's a little bit of, it's not quite card crafting, but the way you create your sets has got a little bit of spice. And then last, there are some gear tokens where you can play your pirate gear and have a monkey go sneak a card from the deck for you, or a parrot that flies a card to the captain for doubloons, or a cannon that will let you blow up everything in the market and get new cards out as well.
I love it. There's so many elements.
There's a lot of elements. A bunch of systems came together there.
And I like that you did take the playtesters' feedback and really try to add the pieces that they said they wanted.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I was just trying to sort of follow my nose on that one, right? And playtesting is so interesting and so fun, right? Because you get everything the players want and everything the players think of, right? And that sifting process where you sort of say, cool, I understand why they want that, but that's not what I want for this game. I really enjoy it. It's something that comes from my UI UX design background of user feedback. And so I both enjoy it and I find it sometimes very frustrating when I, you know, I'm hearing the same stuff and I'm like, got it. I understand that people want this thing. I'm choosing not to do it. So the big example in this game is we're pirates, right? And there's a lot of people who, when they play a pirate game, they want a take that mechanic. They want to be able to steal your tea or your food. That's just not a mechanic I was willing to explore in this game. I personally don't love that much take that. And I think in the words of my friend Jason, there always needs to be something that's sacred. You did all this work to position yourself to get the exact dish you want, to let someone else play a sword and then randomly take it from your hand just felt like such a big feel bad that I sort of really early on said, we're not going to let people steal cards from each other. And so I have had a lot of playtesters who were like, you know, I enjoyed it, but like, I'm a pirate. I want to be able to steal. And I was like, we're not that type of pirate. We're polite pirates. It actually says in the rule book.
You could have just been like, you know, the only kind of tea that people are stealing are more like gossip. It's like, tell me what happened, using those little tiny little sword toothpick. That's what I'm looking for. I'm like, the fancy toothpick, whatever those guys are called.
Yeah, that's probably a different follow-on game, Pirates of the High Teas, where tea is the type that you spill.
Yes, I'm here for it. I mean, that's what you do when you do afternoon or morning tea in general.
Absolutely.
No, I think that is a really important note, though, that when you are getting so much feedback and choosing like what to take and what not to take, because sometimes you do have amazing things that like a title for your game has now been found thanks to a playtester. It's your job to really decide like what to keep and what to get rid of. And it's okay to take something now or take something later, or combine it or just disregard all of it, because I mean, you ultimately are the designer. And since this is something you decide to self-publish, I'd love to know, like, why specifically this game?
Yeah, so I had been sort of, since I started designing, you know, I sort of had that, do I want to pitch? Do I want to publish? And the answer is I want to do both, and I have been doing both. You know, for many reasons, I wanted to dip my toe into publishing. And so I sort of thought long and hard about why did I want to publish and what types of things did I want to publish? And I think it all goes back to what I said about, you know, coming out of PAX East and feeling like the games I wanted to play weren't there. And so I sort of crafted the vision for the company, for Pink Hawk, that is, I want to be bringing sort of whimsical strategy games, right? I'm looking for a gaming experience that is crunchy enough and strategic and tactical and all of the things that I like about modern board games. But I'm also looking for something that is emotionally light. I am a very competitive person, and I find that if I am like, I must crush this, right? It's a stressful evening, right? I'm like deeply engaged and it's, I don't know, it's not the most pleasant thing. I'm looking for something that we can laugh, that we can joke, that we can all try hard to win and really sort of engage our brains, right? But
does it end friendships?
But maintain our friendships. And so when I decided, all right, I'm going to do this, I looked at all those games that I had designed, all the things that were still, you know, baby games and big games. And I felt like Pirates of the High Teas of what I had designed was A, pretty far along, and B, probably the best encapsulation, like clear encapsulation of that vision for the company, and would be a really strong first product to sort of set the tone for the brand. And so, you know, I've got a follow-up game, not a follow-up game in the Pirates world, but one of my next games that I'm kickstarting also sort of lives in this world, but I think it's like less obvious how whimsical it is, and it's a bigger game. So this fell in a really nice sweet spot of, it wasn't super small, right? This is bigger than I think some people would advise doing as a first game. It's cards and a board and tokens and meeples, right? There's nothing wild in the components here. It's a 45-minute game, right? It's a good sort of medium size for what my brand is going to be trying to do. And so yeah, I really looked at it as like, what should be the first foot forward for this company? And it felt like Pirates was going to be the right choice for that for a bunch of reasons.
No, oh, that's cool. And what made you decide on your company's name?
That comes from, it's actually a pretty personal story. 10, 15 years ago, I went through an experience with cancer. I had chemotherapy. I shaved off all my hair. I did the whole smash. And coming back from that, I decided that I wasn't interested in sort of returning to the same way that I'd been presenting myself and sort of running my career. And I just sort of was like, I just don't care anymore, right? I've always wanted to have a mohawk.
Okay.
And I've always wanted to dye my hair pink, and I'm just going to do it, and YOLO, let's see what happens. To my surprise, I discovered that when I was just like, yeah, this is me, this is who I am, I was still succeeding at work, and in fact, I was doing even better, right? And it was one of these moments of like, gosh, I have been sort of believing I needed to be in a certain box in order to be successful, and I don't think I actually needed to. This has been a sort of over a decade now process of just sort of like being who I want to be. And it all sort of started with my pink mohawk. And so thinking about a game company, I was like, that's where I want to start. So I am the pink hawk is kind of the story. But it's been interesting joining the industry. I was just talking about this the other day with Amanda Panda. Because when I got here, then I found out that Pink Tiger Games already exists. And, Amy is fabulous. And Amy also has pink hair. And there's a couple other things. We both did the Gamma Horizons Fellowship and stuff like that. And so we sometimes get confused for each other.
Wait, really? I'm like, you two are so different. That's really funny just because of the pink part.
And our games are very different, too.
Yeah, I was going to say the style, the energy, the light. Well, yeah, she's not very tall.
Yeah.
Also, how many pull-ups can you do? That girl's a beast.
Well, I think there's Amy, there's me, and then there's like Emma Larkin, who like also has had pink hair. And so there's like this, yeah, there's this sort of set of pink-haired designers running around the industry right now. And so, as the second person in the door with the name confusion, I'm like, whoops. I maybe could have or should have done a little bit more research there, but you know.
I think it's fine. I mean, come on. There's so many other companies that share like wizard or whatever. There's like a lot of words that are shared between many companies.
Yes.
So I'm not super concerned.
Yeah.
I definitely feel like, what is it? Thunder Griffin, Eagle Griffin. I get those two confused a lot.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
No. Well, no. Thanks for sharing that story though. Cause yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. I think if you look back on my LinkedIn from back in the day, I think I did at some point write a LinkedIn post about my pink mohawk as well. So my one and only LinkedIn post.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting because when I was younger, I also thought professionalism looked a certain way. So like when I finally started throwing that out, I'm like, oh, now I have a tattoo and I have this nose piercing. And I definitely dress differently than I would never have done before or posted pictures. Like during Pride, I wear very little clothing. So the world can see that. And I'm sure AI is using it. So enjoy AI.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's something really true about the amount of energy it takes to intentionally present yourself in one way or another, and the amount of energy that is freed up when you get to not worry about it and not think about it. I think there are lots of people who have a much deeper and a much harder experience with that than I personally have had, you know, as a white woman working in tech, right? It's not like there were a ton of things that I couldn't do or wear or ways that I wanted to present myself. But even I found that I had been sort of, you know, holding myself back in ways that I hadn't really thought deeply about. And so I'm all about bring your authentic self to wherever it is you're going.
No, I think that's a great lesson because beyond just the freeing space, I know that I feel way more confident when I feel like I'm being me and I'm not filtering myself.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you'll want your company to also reflect that. You want a confident company coming in.
Exactly.
Like, buy my game. No, I'm just kidding.
Buy my game. Save your friendships.
Exactly. And did you have any other like interesting notes of development that of things that maybe changed or shifted through playtesting?
Yeah. I mean, so this game has been through so many iterations, like I said, that I sometimes say it's, you know, my second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth game that I designed because it's just been wildly different, right? So the dice have been left behind and there was a paired drafting system for a while. But I think it's always been, like I said, once I found the sort of heart of the experience, it's been sort of following that as a guiding light. I think a real turning point came when I opened myself up to having a board so that we could do this sort of action selection. I'd really been focused on this is going to be a game of cards, right? And couldn't quite make getting your cards be interesting. At some point, I literally sat down and I was like, okay, what are things associated with pirates, right? That aren't stealing. Stealing and, you know, pillaging and whatever. And so I came up, you know, we have parrots and we have cannons and guns, and we have monkeys, smuggling. So smuggling became, there's a smuggler's hold in the game. And part of this was pirates have ships, right? And I was like, oh, okay, if pirates have ships, then this game can or should have a ship. That's where then the action selection came in, right? And I just remember I was at Origins, whatever year that was, and I had a, you know, an 8.5 by 11, and I drew a little ship and did a bunch of spaces so that I could get it in playtesting at Unpub, and it just sort of immediately clicked into place. And I was like, okay, all right, this was an important moment. I think the other big development thing, and the thing that was the last thing to click into place, was how does this game end? For basically its entire existence, it was essentially a race game. It was, you know, the first person to serve their fourth tee ends the game. So not necessarily the first person to finish wins, but that the ending point was going to be unknown, right? Or dependent on how people were playing the game. It just always sort of surprised some people. They weren't tracking how others were doing. It made it hard to balance that, you know, should I serve imperfect things quickly or should I serve perfect things slowly? Put the thumb on. If you just push us to the end condition faster, you'll probably win. So yeah, I think I was at Origins the next year and sitting there with like Andrew Styles and Dave Abelson and a couple other folks, and we're like, what if we just try it with a set number of rounds? And suddenly you could plan, right? And the last couple rounds became interesting because of this tension of, do you want to pick first in order to be able to get to the captain to serve and things like that? It just sort of all worked. And we very quickly found that like 9 rounds was the answer. And then I added some little bonuses up on the round tracker so that like every game was a little bit different. Sometimes you get a monkey in the first round, sometimes you get nothing, right? That was the one that I think was it took the longest to find. And it feels like such a simple, oh, just give it a certain number of rounds. But I just couldn't quite imagine it.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I like the fact that you added the bonuses, because I've noticed in many games, people forget to move the round tracker. But when you're taking something off, it has a very obvious visual feel to it. I kind of like with Wingspan, you're removing little cubes. So it's like, that is such a good choice when working on those kinds of games and trying to have that kind of round tracker just to remind people, make it, in the nicest way of saying, idiot proof.
Yeah, but something that you want to do rather than something that's just maintenance, right?
Yeah.
Because maintenance will get forgotten, but no one wants to leave their monkey behind, right?
Oh, no. And I also, like, for me, I've played a decent amount of published games that do have that race until you get this thing, but it's like, that one spiteful person can just end the game early when everyone else is like thoroughly planning and like making the best of their moves, but then they don't get to see the ending of it. And that just like never really felt the best, which is kind of a little bit of a bummer.
I think there are games that it works for, but I think in this particular game, right, because there is so much of this planning and strategy, and it doesn't feel like something someone should be able to suddenly end. And given what I was trying to do with Whimsical Strategy, it had that sort of, yeah, really awkward feel bad moment of someone was like, my next turn was gonna be epic and now I don't get to take it.
Also, I mean, it feels like thematically right that you're taking your time with your tea and you're eating and you know when it's going to be up. You know when you're going to get kicked off your table.
Exactly, right? You know, this is how many times the captain can have someone show up with food before they're like, the day is over.
He's like, I am sick. I will throw up. We are on a boat. Please exactly. Stop giving me more beverages.
No more. No more food and tea.
That's so funny. And how long did it take from that initial like inspiration to the game being out to the backers?
Well, so if this game started in 2022, which I believe is the correct year, it started right around the sort of April, May timeframe in 22, and it was delivered to backers starting March of 26. The Kickstarter was March of 25. So it was about 3 years to get from, let's make a game about tea, to here's a Kickstarter and it's up and running. And then another year to get from the Kickstarter into backers' hands.
And since this was your very first, how did the Kickstarter go, if you don't mind me asking? Like, how was the experience of doing it?
It was wild. It was a lot of fun. It was so much work. So much work getting ready for it. And I had planned to do the Kickstarter in the fall of 24. And sometime in the mid-summer of 24, I realized that I didn't have enough art and graphic design to get copies that could go to content creators in time for the Kickstarter to go. And because I'd been planning on the fall, it was one of these things where you like, I slipped 2 weeks and that pushed me by 3 months because suddenly we were in Christmas and I didn't want to run the Kickstarter over the Christmas season because people want to spend their money on gifts that they can give this year, not on something that will hopefully appear next year.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people like print it out and be like, I backed this for you. It's coming whatever time frame.
Yeah. And so it was just one of these like, it was so, I mean, it was kind of devastating in the moment to be like, I slipped by a couple weeks and now I'm an entire 3 months away. But it was honestly the best choice I could have made because I got so much more done. It let me get all of my ducks in a row so that when the Kickstarter did go, it was fairly smooth. And it was, I mean, it was a pretty big Kickstarter, right? We had 4,000 backers. So I think it worked to my favor that I took that moment to pause. But man, it was such a hard emotional decision to make because like intellectually I knew it was the right choice, but I had set that deadline and I was like, I'm gonna do it in the fall of 24, and I told people I was gonna do it in the fall of 24. No one cared, right? Like no one was like, oh no, we can't trust Emily anymore because her Kickstarter slipped by 3 months. But I disappointed myself, and then I had to just be like, you were the only one who was counting on that deadline, Emily. So do it right, not fast.
I feel like that's one of those things that a lot of people don't know is I actually did run a Kickstarter. That was my first game I ever tried to get published. I tried to do a Kickstarter, but it was with the wrong kind of game when no one knew who I was. And like, I did all the things you shouldn't do that I now know. And I would have gone back to baby Danielle and been like, Danielle, no, 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 don't do it. And it was that point where it was like, okay, this is barely going to fund.
Right.
Or I pull it. And I decided to pull it. And after that, I was like, yeah, I don't think I ever want to be a publisher. I think I just want to pitch games and help make my games a reality through other studios.
No, totally. I mean, it's a lot of work, right? And it was a bunch of work during the campaign because I was doing like weekly updates where there'd be little puzzles, but we were also voting on the names of the characters in the game to sort of keep people engaged because I didn't do stretch goals or anything like that. But yeah, it was a bunch of work they always say, write your emails, write your updates ahead of time. And I didn't do that. And then I was, you know, up until whatever o'clock being like, all right, I gotta do an update for tomorrow. But it was great. It's just, it's so exciting when a game like hits, right? It lands with an audience and you have people who are just deeply in love with the idea and then you manage to pull it off, right? I think this game in particular, I've definitely seen folks reacting online who they're like, I don't get it, right? I don't get why pirates goes together with tea. I don't get, you know, this seems like a set collection game with some action selection. And I'm like, yes, that is true. And this is perhaps not the game for them, right? Because there are other people who are like, I love pirates and I love afternoon tea. And this brings together two things and I just cannot wait to play it, right? And so it speaks to certain folks. And I'm glad to have found, you know, my people, essentially, right? The people that like this speaks to. And I'm okay with the fact that it doesn't speak to everyone, but it really speaks to the people that it hits for.
I love all the new different kinds of themes that have been coming out over the past few years. Because I know I kind of started in the industry. I started playing games at like 2018 and really trying to design in like 2019. And I feel like over those years, it has changed so much. It's not just like train, space, fantasy anymore. We see so many more interesting types of games. And it makes me so happy. Like when I look at my shelves, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm a weirdo. I got some interesting interests. They're all over the place. But like, that's what intrigues me. That's kind of like the idea of TTRPGs. I don't really do them much, but if I do, it's not Dungeons and Dragons. It's like the Polymorph system, or it's like some, I don't know, weird one that you would never assume that I would play. But like, it's the more interesting themes that are outside the box that pull me in more.
Yeah. And I think that is, I mean, I think it's a product of more people feeling like, they can just show up as themselves and be like, this is the thing that I love. And I believe that there are other people like me, right? And I'm okay with the fact that it's not everyone in the world, right? But, you know, doing that work to find those folks, to find those like fans for life, right? I don't know. I'm just so excited that there's companies who are willing to, you know, jump in and take that on, because I think it, I don't know, the more games that are out there made by more different people, the more games that will be there to bring new people into the hobby.
100%. Yeah. And what was your favorite and least favorite part of the experience of working on Pirates of High Tees? And I want us to focus a little more on the design side.
I think my least favorite part of it, honestly, was the development process at the end when I was like, okay, this is, you know, 90% done. How do I finish it? It's my first game that I was publishing. I looked around to see if anybody wanted to help me out as like a developer, and it wasn't gonna happen, right? My friends are not necessarily interested in doing development gigs, and I was an unknown, right? So I did the development myself, and it was like pulling teeth for me at the end there, because I was like, yeah. I have used every single idea that I have. It was just put it on the table and sift through that feedback and see if there was any wheat in that feedback, right? Of just like, someone's gotta have the brilliant idea that helps me understand like how to end this game. So for me, that part of sort of just finishing it off and dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's was so laborious. My favorite part was probably thinking about that set collection system and how it was going to work and what were all the dishes, right? It was a ton of fun to come up with all the pirate puns and jokes and things like that. But to think about like, all right, we'll have four fleets, right? And what are our flavors and how do they work together? And what is this smashing mechanic? Because I find that so fun, both mechanically to be able to say, I don't have what I need, but at the cost of efficiency, I can make it. I feel like I don't see a ton of games that let me do that in set collection, right? It's usually like you got the card you need or you don't. And the fact that then thematically it was fun and it was funny, that for me was just, I really enjoyed that part. And I really enjoyed looking at things and being like, should these go together? Do they belong in the same fleet? Do they, you know, I'd give myself the assignment, like the pink fleet is a fusion of French and Japanese cuisine. So what are we going to do here? What kind of distribution? Should this deck be more chocolatey? Should it be more salty? Right? All of that kind of stuff. I had a lot of fun diving into the details on that one.
Oh God, I'm sure. And when it got to the art steps and you're doing the art direction, I'm sure you had a blast. I feel like that's the one thing about self-publishing that I do really like. And I've kind of gotten lucky on getting games signed with smaller publishers that let me help with art direction. But I love just seeing the ideas in my head come onto the page, and it looks so much better because, you know, I only have so much skill when it comes to illustrating. It feels so nice when you have that final product.
Yeah, I have very little skill when it comes to illustrating. So it looks so much better once I get an artist on it. Even just the process of like, people say the art direction is a lot of fun, because this game, for folks who haven't seen it, right, it very much leans into pink, purple, and teal. They're colors that I love, right? And I feel like they're colors I don't see enough in board games. Just being like, no, we're going to have our fleet flags are going to be pink and teal and purple and orange, right? This is what we're doing.
They're the most terrifying pirates clearly on the seas.
Yeah, but even then we get to be like, and this is the teacup fleet and this is the macaron fleet. And so the little flags are like a macaron with crossed forks underneath it, right?
Hell yeah, I'm in. All the gluten-free people are also in.
Yes. They're there for that fleet.
That's amazing. I'm glad that you got to have a lot of fun with that, because I feel like that's why we do these things. It's supposed to be enjoyable and less stressful. I mean, there's stress there, but I think in general it should be fun.
Well, and I feel like those moments of fun were the ones that were able to sustain me through the moments of not fun, through the moments of I can't figure out how this ends. Well, I'll go come up with a few more dishes for the for the deck, right?
Totally. That's why I work on so many games. I like bouncing around, because otherwise I'll get stuck on something and I'll want to bang my head against the wall, and I'm not very patient. And sometimes I just like, I need a break in order to problem solve. And I found that that was my solution, is bouncing between projects, which I know is not how everyone works, but that's how it works best for me.
I think I'm just like you. I have to have a bunch of projects going on at the same time, because if I hit a wall on one, I need to be able to go work on something else. And I need to be able to sit down and be like, what am I feeling this morning? Is it going to be more afternoon tea, or am I feeling like I want to think about dinosaurs right now, or Victorian flowers, right? So I probably have too many projects going on, but I do have like, I think I've got like my hands in 8 games right now, some of which are destined for Pink Hawk and some of which are not.
Oh, that's so cool. And so do you have any projects that people should be looking out for then from your own Pink Hawk?
Yeah, so this fall of 26, we're doing a 2-game bundle on Kickstarter. It's a cat-tastic duo of strategy games. So Super Chonk is a quick card game of cats that just want to get fat by Ben Jones. So this is actually the first game I've signed to Pink Hawk. And then Good Kitties is a game that I designed that is a cooperative game of house cats taking over the house while their humans are asleep every night. It's like a 50 to 80 minute experience, comes with 8 missions in the box, and is sort of a, you know, it's a co-op strategy game. Doing those two together, trying a Kickstarter that has 2 games in it, you can get one or the other or both. But yeah, that's coming this fall from Pink Hawk.
Oh, that's exciting. I have 3 cats, so big fan of cats.
Me too. So that, again, when I was like, design what you know, I like looked around my house and I was like, there are my cats and there are my teacups. These are the first 2 games I'm going to design.
Yeah, you're like, my cats haven't made me money yet, so let's make games about them. Amazing. All right. And then I guess my last question for you, completely unrelated from anything we've been talking about, is if you could have designed a game that you didn't design, which one would it have been?
I'm going to go with the game that I just sort of go to as my favorite, which is Pandemic. I love a co-op, and I feel I played so many games of Pandemic before the pandemic. I haven't really been able to play it since, but now we've picked up the Lord of the Rings one. For me, that game is just really special, and it's me and my partner just sitting there playing it on, you know, the hardest level and being like, we're awesome. Would love to have designed that.
Yeah, Matt Leacock's great. If you haven't listened to his episode, that's how I closed out my last season. It's a really interesting conversation of how to make cooperative games and how he came up with that system and all the future variations on Pandemic. And just, we even talk UX and art, like the cover, and how he told the publisher, no, you need to change the cover, because it was like chaotic energy versus the vibes that you see now. And he like insisted there be a woman on the cover, and I was like, let's go. It's a great conversation.
Oh, that sounds great. I will have to go listen to that.
You definitely will. Now you have homework.
I do.
You're welcome.
I'm excited. I'm excited about this homework.
Oh man. And I hope everyone else who's been listening to this episode enjoyed it. This was Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration of Publication, episode 143, Pirates of High Tees. And then Emily, I know you got all the social medias and websites probably. Where can people find you and follow your games?
Yeah. So if you want to find me, follow my games, you can go on Instagram at Pink Hawk Games, or you can find our website, pinkhawkgames.com. If you want to find me personally, I'm on the Building the Game podcast, which is a weekly documentary podcast about game design. I'm not on it every week, but I am a co-host, so I'm on it fairly frequently. And you can also find me on Discord as Emily Keeps Kitties, and that's really where you should find me.
Excellent. And then I've been your host. I'm Danielle Reynolds. I have also all the social medias, but my personal one is Token Gamer, spelled G-A-Y-M-E-R. And you can find that mostly on Instagram. And if you add the 13, I'm also on TikTok. I'm trying to be better. And then the show, Game Design Unboxed, we have Instagram and TikTok as well. So check those videos out that I've been posting. Hopefully you'll see Emily's one popping up soon. But thank you so much, Emily. This has been a blast. And honestly, I wish I had brought some dessert to go with the tea I've been sipping while we've been recording.
Thanks for having me, Danielle. This has been awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.